Welcome to the MindBody Health Podcast by the London Psychiatry Clinic. The London Psychiatry Clinic is a collective of experienced psychiatrists, psychologists, nutritionists, and scientists who have come together to provide you with the most effective and cutting-edge holistic mental health care. I'm Dr. Anna McLaughlin, and I hold a PhD in neuroscience and psychology. I'm also the director of PsyTranslate, which is a science communication agency that I founded to make science accessible and exciting for everyone. I also have an MSc in psychiatric research and a BSc in psychological science. Today, we have Dr. Jonathan Garabet joining us. Jonathan is a consultant general adult psychiatrist and medical psychotherapist working at the London Psychiatry Clinic. He also holds a degree in neuroscience. We're very excited to get started with our first podcast episode, and today we'll be talking about how COVID affects both our mental well-being and physical health. Fortunately, we'll also be giving you some helpful strategies and advice to help you cope with the anxiety and stress caused by the pandemic. So the reason that we're talking about this, a lot of people might be wondering, because it's the middle of summer, you know, things are improving, everything feels like it's getting better. So why are we still talking about COVID and mental well-being? You know, why does it still matter?
Well, we're not quite out of it yet, are we?
No,
you know, it's brilliant that we are getting out of it. But as you say, it's almost summer. And, you know, in a normal year, people want to, often that's a time that you want to kind of wind down, look after your health, you know, relax, you know, these sorts of things.
Get your summer body.
It's been such a stressful year. And I think it's important that we talk about and maybe give, you know, the audience some sort of idea of, well, what are the stresses that we may have all been under? How have they been affected directly and indirectly by COVID, by the restrictions? And, you know, importantly, you know, what to do about it and when to seek help if you're struggling.
Yeah. I've actually noticed a bit of a paradox almost. You know, it feels like everything's improving, but a lot of my friends have been telling me they're having a lot of anxiety with lockdown easing. You know, they're feeling anxious about mixing with people again, about going back to work. They're anxious because they don't know what's going to happen later this year. You know, they can't even book a holiday because they don't know if they can go away. A lot of people are having financial problems. So even though we've gone through sort of, you know, one of the worst winters I think most people have experienced in a long time, in a really strict lockdown, people are still really dealing with the aftermath of that stressful period.
Definitely. I mean, clinically, I see there's a lot of sort of lockdown restriction anxiety coming in. And maybe that's partly, you know, as you say, about all the sort of stresses, the financial stresses, these sorts of things. But there's also, you know, the idea that for some people, they've been in a bit of a bubble and they've retreated into something of a kind of comfort bubble. Doesn't mean it was all that comfortable, but it's like their sort of sphere of where they feel comfortable has really sort of shrunk during this time. And so then, you know, there's a lot of people that maybe before had very mild social anxiety or, you know, these sorts of things, that this is a lot worse now. So
And they're emerging into a new world. Yeah. It's not going back to the same old way things were before.
It's not getting back to normal. It's getting back to something of that people don't quite understand. When, you know, when everything is sort of normal, as it were, our mind knows what to predict and we just do it. And right now, nobody quite knows the rules or where, you know, how things are going to change. And so I think it's natural that there's sort of anxiety emerging at this point, but there's also been a lot of build-up of stress since since the pandemic has really shaken up everybody's lives.
People are starting to recognize how much anxiety or stress they've been through. I think it's really important to address that a lot of these feelings of anxiety are really normal. A lot of people are going through them, and they can be for, you know, a variety of like very different reasons. As we said, like it could be that some people are socializing again. They feel a bit stressed about that. It could be about returning to work. A lot of people have been sort of juggling working from home with school care. A lot of people have had workplaces where people have been laid off or on furlough. So they've taken on a bigger workload. But what are some reasons that patients have been struggling with anxiety, do you think, when you've seen them in clinic?
Well, I mean, if you sort of start with the actual direct effect of COVID, you know, lots of people have had COVID. You know, some people have been on ITU, some people have been in hospital, some people have only had a mild illness. But COVID itself seems to be associated with an increase of all sorts of mental and neurological conditions. And this was quite widely publicized in a paper from the University of Oxford recently that got a lot of press in
it was in the Financial Times. I read that one. It was really interesting. And they found that people who had COVID were much more likely to have a psychiatric or neurological problem within the 6 months after their infection. Yeah. So not just when they were actually ill with COVID, but in the 6 month period after. And that was compared to people who had the flu or a respiratory illness in the same time period. Some of the numbers in that study really surprised me. I think it was 30% of people who had COVID developed some kind of mental health condition. Mm. And then for the people that were in ICU, so in emergency care, it was almost 50%, I think around 46. It was really high.
Yeah, it was about a third of anybody with COVID having some sort of not only mental health, but also neurological.
Because they mentioned brain hemorrhage, Parkinson's, dementia.
Strokes, Parkinson's, these sorts of things. That those rates were higher in those with more severe COVID that were admitted to intensive care. But I mean, it's maybe important to highlight that people that have been admitted to intensive care do tend to have higher rates of things like psychotic episodes and PTSD that, you know, when you're being kind of in and out of consciousness, you know,
in a ward where everyone's wearing masks and it's a pandemic and it's a virus, must be terrifying.
I guess the take home, I think, for me from that study was it's really common to have some sort of mental health or neurological kind of diagnosis after COVID. And the more severe it was, you know, the more likely it is.
Yeah, and so probably I think because the more distressing it was for the person as well. You know, we don't really know whether it was the virus or the stress of the experience that contributed more towards it, or it was a combination of both.
Yeah, it's going to be different in different people. But and like you say, we don't know. And there's a lot to still try and sort of understand about it all. I think if you kind of break it down, I think how might it be contributing? I think there's the sort of direct and indirect effects of the virus itself. So, indirect effects, I mean, you know, immune response, the kind of fight, flight, stress response that we get when we're unwell, the effect of low oxygen to the brain, these sorts of things. There's the medications that we might use to treat it. These can have side effects at times. So there's, you know, various different sort of, let's say, biological ways that it can contribute. And then there's a more sort of psychological and social. And obviously it's
we all interact with one another. So it's really difficult to, I guess we don't really have the answers yet for how COVID affects. But I think the most important message for today is that it's really common to be suffering from any mental health symptom. If you've had COVID, even if you haven't had COVID, because it's been a stressful experience for everyone. I mean, specifically thinking about people experiencing COVID during a pandemic, just having this virus that, you know, it's a new kind of virus that people haven't had before. Even if they don't go into hospital, they're probably having to isolate. You know, maybe their friends and family are scared to see them. Those are all factors that can really, I guess, add to the stress of the experience if you don't have someone around to look after you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's obviously been a really sort of scary kind of threat. It's a global threat, but it's also an individual threat. People have, you know, been worried about loved ones, they've been worried about their own health, and then we've not had the usual kind of access to, you know, our coping strategies. So we can't pop around and have a cup of tea with your mum, or, you know, whatever it might be that was the sort of way of getting sort of social support. You haven't been able to go to, you know, play sport, you haven't been able to go out to you know, kind of listen to music or a concert or whatever it might be, all of these things that we do that,
and community bonding,
and so, you know, these things that we might think of as hobbies or these sorts of things, actually I think what this has highlighted in some ways is that they've all got a really important kind of part to play in sort of helping us maintain a sort of mental well-being kind of balance, that, you know, these things
equilibrium.
You know, they sort of function. And maybe this is the reason that we like them so much, is that they make us feel better.
Mm.
And making us feel better is not some sort of hedonistic kind of pursuit. It is actually kind of necessary. It's a way that
humans
we balance our lives.
Social animals. They were designed to, you know, support one another and be around people. So when you take that away, you know, I think that can really affect people's emotions. It can be very difficult for people to start controlling their emotions. think, is it called emotional dysregulation? I mean, you probably can explain that concept a bit better than me as a clinician.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess if you break it down, you know, emotional regulation, being able to kind of regulate and sort of be in sort of control of your emotions. Yeah. Dysregulation, there's difficulties. So for some people, that's becoming completely sort of overwhelmed with certain emotions. And so they may have panic attacks, anxiety, you know, kind of feel distressed or angry or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also dysregulated if you cut off from them. And that's another way that many people kind of cope. And I think going back to the idea of this sort of anxiety that's happening as we're kind of coming out of lockdown, we can also think about that as, in some ways, people have developed new strategies to deal with their anxieties. And some of that has been isolation. Yeah. Some of that has been shutting down. And the idea of, like, hold on a moment, you can begin to see people again, it's not easy. It's sort of takes some sort of adjustment. And, you know, we were just having kind of lunch and being in a room talking with people, it feels like such a weird experience
but having to navigate all the new rules about wearing a mask and not wearing a mask, and it's very difficult. And it's, you know, especially if you're a bit worried about, you know, like going back to socializing with people or going to work, it's a whole new experience, and it's not the way that we used to socialize. So I think that's really common for people to experience anxiety. And it can just feel overwhelming being surrounded so many people after being on your own for so long.
Yeah. I mean, our brains are sort of predictive machines. They like routine, and then things can be kind of automated. So you can drive to work, you know, as long as there's not sort of a diversion, you can drive to work without really thinking about your route. And I think that's a good sort of, you know, simile for, like, we can do things in the world, we can juggle lots of things if we know what those things are, we know how to do them.
But at the moment, learn how to predict.
There's so many things that we have to actually consciously think about. Hold on a moment, do I need to put a mask on here? How many people am I allowed to be with? And even just actually interacting in person, it's like, do I hug, do I kiss, what do I do? All of this actually becomes overwhelming.
You know, and the brain gets tired from making decisions. And I mean, it even comes back to when people talk about, oh, when you create a healthy habit, do it first thing in the morning when your brain is fresh, because by the end of the day you're tired from making all these decisions. And then if you think about being in a pandemic and your brain is constantly trying to adjust to new situations, it's no wonder people feel tired and overwhelmed all the time. I mean, I think I ran out of bananas the other day and almost cried, but like, I wouldn't normally do that.
Why bananas?
Oh, it was just easy, and I have them in my morning smoothie. So, but I ran out and I thought, like, oh no, I don't have anything in the house, I'm going to be hungry. And
okay,
it's just that feeling of being overwhelmed by the smallest things, because you feel like something can just derail your whole day.
And so your morning smoothie is part of your routine.
Yeah.
And so then, you don't have the banana, and it's like,
And it's such a small thing, but I think all these like feelings of like heightened like emotions, and because like I think, oh, like I'm going into work for the day, like I haven't been in for a long time. Am I going to be able to find everything I need? Is it going to be there? Who am I going to see there? Like, it's, you know, that was all at the back of my mind. So then I overreacted to this very tiny thing because I was worried about all the uncertainty in the rest of the day. And I've heard lots of stories from friends as well. You know, they felt like they've really not been able to manage sort of very small difficulties. But when they put it in perspective through all the other things they're going through, it's almost like they're having a bit of an emotional reaction to something that they can't really control. Well, it's something that doesn't really matter because they can't control the wider situation, and everything feels a bit out of control and uncertain.
When you know the rules, at least you can then control that. But as the rules
change,
you know, you're entering this sort of realm of uncertainty again. And it's just sort of, it's a greater kind of level of workload for your brain to have to think about it all the time. And then, you know, it sort of, you know, leads to a lot of anxiety. So I think that that's it's a major thing, is to sort of, like, we don't quite know where we stand.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's definitely probably sort of contributing to this becoming not only a positive time, but also a challenging one as things sort of open up again.
Yeah, I think people a lot of learning a lot about themselves and how to, you know, cope with stress and build resilience and, as you said, form new coping strategies. But, you know, for some people that don't have as much support or, you know, maybe they're in a difficult situation, it can be a lot harder for them than other people. So I think that's really important to recognize that. But I think a lot of people, they might not even be realizing that they're struggling with the anxiety of all these uncertainties going on. Because when I've been talking about anxiety, you know, and talking about it to my friends or just people that I know, they consider anxiety very much as like being worried about something. But when you don't know what you're worried about, it can manifest in a lot of different ways. Like a lot of people don't know, having like brain fog is a common symptom. So that could be like difficulty concentrating on something. It could be like fatigue, so just feeling tired or burnt out a lot of the time. I mean, what are some other symptoms of anxiety that you see in the clinic?
Yeah, I mean, these terms, they're kind of interesting, aren't they? Because they've got a sort of clinical, more specific definition, and then there's a more general one. So when we talk about stress or anxiety, they can often mean different things to different people. And I think it's important not to actually kind of nail it down too much and say, well, this is what it means. But when we talk about anxiety, I would say there's, you know, anxiety is there because something feels like it's wrong. Either we feel under threat or we feel we're missing something. You know, biologically, all mammals actually have two sort of different sort of anxiety systems. There's a fear system that says there's a predator over there, I better run away.
Yeah.
This links to our fight flight system. And then there's a more sort of attachment anxiety system that says, you know, wait a minute, where's mum gone? The baby, you know, the sort of infant wants to go and find mum.
Yeah.
So there's essentially a kind of attachment related anxiety of, I don't feel safe in this environment, I need to go and find somebody to be near. And then there's a kind of like, wait a minute, something feels like it's a threat, I need to do something, like run away or fight it or find a solution for it. So, you know, the kind of wanting to be in control, find a solution for this thing that feels like it's a threat.
Yeah.
So, and then how that manifests in different ways is, you know, biologically, anxiety, you know, it's linked to our sort of stress response system, you know, fight flight system. It gets us, our body kind of, you know, pumping, our heart pumping, our, you know, sort of muscles,
cortisol,
oxygenated,
you know.
All this sort of stuff, so that we can kind of get up and run away or fight or do something. You know, emotions are there, like wired, in order to make us do things. And so one of the things that's happened during the pandemic is we've had anxiety. We've been told you can't do anything, just stay at home. And so, you know, this leads to all sorts of, you know, problems and difficult behaviors. But if
and
we think about
people have been in this heightened state of stress for, you know, months now, and that's really starting to affect them both physically and mentally, because it's not healthy to be in a heightened state of stress for a long time. But as we said, you know, there's social issues, lack of access to like normal healthcare, and just, you know, getting out and doing the normal things that you can't do. People are unable to reduce their stress. And I think when people talk about the fight or flight system, you know, everyone envisages like a lion attacking you and then you have to run away from it. That's kind of like the standard like evolutionary cliche of fight or flight. But I think people really underestimate social stress and how that affects your fight or flight system. Because when you're not around people and you're not around social support, or maybe you just feel anxious because you haven't seen people for a while, then that can really contribute to social anxiety. Because we actually also evolved to, you know, be around people, to be in a supportive environment. And any form of, you know, like being on your own for too long, being isolated, not feeling like you have social support, or even like a perceived rejection, those can actually biologically affect you by increasing your immune system activity and putting you in that fight or flight response. So because, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, if people were on their own for too long, or, you know, if they weren't being looked after by, you know, the wider group, then they would actually be more vulnerable. So it's something that we have evolved to need to be around people and need to be in a social and supportive environment, and not just humans, but I mean animals as well.
I mean, quite, when you say all these things, I think of, you know, when you watch a David Attenborough documentary on, you know, kind of some sort of, you know, ape colony or whatever.
The hierarchy.
This is pretty much what, you know, sort of is relevant to us from a biological point of view, it's a pretty similar underlying biology. So, yeah. Yep, you know, if you think of the way that they actually groom each other, that they are, you know, sort of stroking, and you know, you'll see your, you know, dog or cat doing this too. Like
touch,
actually,
yeah.
Touch is such an important part of sort of stress regulation, yeah. But it also at the same time creates social bonding.
Yeah.
And so this has sort of shattered over you know, the past year, is that the ability to, you know, kind of engage in sort of social bonding has been massively restricted. And in doing so, it's restricted our ability to actually regulate each other's stress systems, or co-regulate, as people sort of say. And so, yeah, in terms of sort of the, like, what are the kind of downstream, like, physical effects on that? Well, that affects your blood pressure. It affects your, you know, kind of cortisol levels, the way that your body deals with sugar, all these sorts of things. And, yeah, so from a sort of mind point of view, and I'm hesitant to say psychological, because I think there's different parts of the mind. And so you've got the kind of, I am worried about work. I'm worried about my finances. But as you say, there's also the effect on other functions of the mind, like I can't concentrate, I can't pay attention so much anymore. Oh, I'll just spend another, you know, half an hour on Instagram or whatever, rather than doing something that feels like it just gives me a temporary hit.
Because a lot of people thought they weren't being productive enough in lockdown. You know, they weren't like writing a novel or achieving something. And I mean, I think just surviving lockdown is an achievement in itself, because we are under so much stress. I think a lot of people really struggled with just the motivation and even just being able to do their normal jobs, because their normal jobs are so much more stressful under the circumstances of working from home. But I mean, I think it's pretty clear that we're all under a lot of stress, but what can we actually do about it? You know, how can we actually improve our mental well-being during a lockdown?
So, I mean, if we take the sort of principle of, like, when we're stressed, our body wants to do something.
Yeah.
Right. So if your body's in a kind of chronic state of stress, it's saying to you, like, be alert, do something to kind of change this.
Yeah.
This stressor. So either run away from it or fight it or go and seek help from somebody else that makes you feel safe. So, but of course, when it's at this sort of global level, we can't actually do all that much sometimes. So now, thankfully, with lockdown restrictions, we can go and seek support and comfort from others. And this doesn't mean you have to go and talk about everything, but just actually just being in the presence of others can be a calming kind of experience.
Not talking about it for a while and just doing something normal to take your mind off it.
Absolutely. But then it just creates a different sort of feeling of safety, you know, that you are kind of feeling comfortable and safe. This is a really important way of kind of regulating safe, is to sort of be in the environment of people that make you feel sort of calm.
So just taking a walk in the park with a friend, or like enjoying going to a coffee shop again, and just those little
just
things,
really
that,
simple things,
you know, we kind of take for granted, but once you do them, you actually feel so much better after. And
And then, you know, in terms of the kind of the adrenaline that's pumping, these sorts of things, well, obviously sport, activity, exercise, that's, you know, kind of important, you know, it's an important sort of outlet. Psychologically, when we've got, you know, intense emotions, anxiety, worry, depression, yes, talking about it can be helpful, but I think any sort of symbolic representation in other realms, it doesn't have to be verbal, it can be, you can paint, you can draw, you can, you know, kind of do something creative, you can cook, you can, you know, exactly, just having some sort of outlet for your emotions is really important. In lockdown, the different sort of options we've had to how to sort of express our emotions have become restricted. And I think that what I see as a clinician is that people get into trouble when they essentially begin to over rely on a few potentially kind of unhelpful sort of coping strategies. So if your coping strategies are kind of narrow or rigid, then this is maybe you know an area that sort of that could be helpful to sort of begin to develop. But you might feel anxious going back to doing your yoga class, your, you know, whatever it might be. And anxiety leads to avoidance.
What advice would you give for people that are, they want to socialize again, but, you know, they feel a bit like anxious, or like they might have butterflies being in a group and like might not like feel like themselves? What would you say to them if they wanted to get out and socialize, but they're just feeling a bit nervous about it?
Avoidance is normal with anxiety, but it doesn't help.
Okay.
So essentially, I would say, you know, feeling nervous is okay. You can live with feeling nervous.
Normal. Everyone's probably feeling a little bit
but
nervous.
But if you retreat further and further and further back, more and more and more things will make you feel nervous.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a sort of gradual kind of just pushing your comfort zone out.
Yeah, like graded exposure.
Absolutely.
Working your way up.
Yeah, I mean, you're using a term that is used in, you know, sort of psychotherapy and CBT and behavioral therapies, you know, graded exposure. So gradual exposure to increasingly kind of anxiety provoking situations.
So start off by seeing, you know, like a few friends in a place that you trust, and then slowly you can build up. And I think it's really important as well. Like I've been feeling exhausted sometimes, like if I come into the office and see lots of people, and you know, before COVID I would go into the office and then I'd go see my friends after, whereas now I found I need to sort of space out socializing, just because I feel a bit more emotionally drained. And I think it's just being aware of that and being like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, go into work on this day, and then I'm going to go for a coffee with a friend on that day, rather than packing too much in, because then you can feel exhausted and like you might not want to do that again.
Yeah, I mean, we're all guilty of it. I'm certainly guilty of packing too much in. You know?
Yeah.
And of course, you're kind of enthusiastic to see people, and we've all got busy lives and all these sorts of things. But yeah, when you're in a kind of heightened stress state, actually trying to just pause, take a step back and think, I'll do it little by little rather than like boom and bust.
Yeah.
Because that's often something that happens, particularly with like, you know, burnout, chronic fatigue, maybe with sort of post kind of COVID and other sort of post-viral syndromes, is that people that it was used to being really, really active before and then have been inactive kind of end up trying to get back to those really heightened activity levels. But their body is just not ready for that yet. And so then they go into this boom and bust sort of cycle. So doing it gradually, you know, and as you say, sort of graded exposure to the anxiety.
Okay, so we've talked about, you know, people that might have mental health after COVID, people that might be struggling a bit with social anxiety or mild anxiety. But what are signs that someone might be actually struggling from something a bit more severe, or they might actually need professional help for what they're going through? What's the difference between, you know, like mild or severe anxiety?
I mean, it's really difficult to kind of know where to draw the line. It will be different for different people, because it depends very much on, you know, almost how much capacity have they got to take on more stress. But if it feels like your glass is already overfilling, definitely I'd say seek help at that level. But I think if you sort of break it down to think, well, how are they functioning?
How is
their body functioning? How is the mind functioning? How are they able to, you know, kind of control their sort of behaviors? And how are they functioning in terms of, you know, work, relationships, family, these sorts of things?
Yeah.
And so if there's been sort of persistent problems in any of those areas, so if, say, physically they've got persistent sleep problems, or like energy levels feel particularly drained, or they're agitated, or, you know, they've got sort of worsening pain or gut problems, these sorts of things, then
it's manifesting,
you know,
physically in a way.
It's manifesting physically and it's persistent and it's sort of becoming problematic. I'd say seek help early.
Yeah.
So there's the physical side of things. Psychologically, again, you know, if we break it down to sort of emotions and kind of thoughts, well, if you're particularly preoccupied about something to the degree that you can't get other stuff done, you can't sleep so well, you can't concentrate, you can't join in the conversation at dinner, these sorts of things, then, you know, maybe it's a good idea to speak to somebody about that. That doesn't mean going on antidepressants. That means maybe having a few sessions of sort of counseling to try to find a way to,
sometimes,
you know,
just being aware of what's
way.
Making you stressed can actually help you move past it. And just, you know, like education, psychological education about what are the symptoms of stress, what are some coping strategies, can really change how people actually deal with the stress they're facing and help them manage their anxiety like that.
Yeah, I think having some reflective time each day may be quite helpful. So people do, so, you know, sort of a bit of a diary or these sorts of things, and think about, well, what are the emotions that I've been feeling, am I finding it difficult to deal with those, Am I dealing with those through problem behaviors like alcohol or other sort of process addictions, or just, you know, being on my phone too much or retreating from the world? You know, there's behavioral kind of consequences from it.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, these days, I think everybody's got, you know, probably unhealthy sort of habits with their phone and these sorts of things. But I think
it helps to assess those.
You know, if the thoughts or emotions have got to the point that they are sort of too intense, or things are unbalanced so that there's a particular thought occupying your mind too much of the time, or, you know, your emotions are, you know, overwhelmingly of one sort, anxious, sad, depressed, etc., you know, think about balance. And if there's a lack of balance, then that's where I would say you may find it beneficial to begin to seek some sort of help. And that could be from, you know, your GP initially, or there are, you know, sort of psychotherapy services, including like online ones, or, you know, kind of low level sort of counseling.
People can find the right approach for them. And at the end, it's all about, you know, balancing your mental well-being with your physical health and making sure that you're looking after everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at sort of health optimization and sort of performance, you have to take the two together, that, you know, mental and physical do go absolutely sort of hand in hand. And so, you know, looking after your body is going to help your mind, looking after your mind is going to help your body, and these things are going to affect your life. So, you know, your functioning, how are you functioning in relationships? I've seen so many relationships that have broken down during this time, or people have had intense levels of stress by homeschooling and all these sorts of things. That stress gets lodged. It gets lodged in the mind. It gets lodged in your back pain, your, you know, kind of posture, your poor diet, your over sort of use of alcohol, all these sorts of things. So any of those sorts of things where there's, you know, functional impairment, then I would say it's a good idea to seek some help.
Basically, that covers everything that we wanted to talk about today. And yeah, I think for people that wanted to know more information about what we spoke about, there's some really great resources on the London Psychiatry Clinic website. You know, there's a lot about mental well-being as well as mental health and physical health. It's a very holistic perspective. So thank you so much for your time today. It was really interesting talking to you, and it was really great to get a clinical perspective as well as your holistic perspective. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.